Welcome. This is EconoDay's Economist Roundtable. I am Ann Picker, EconoDay's Chief Economist. Jeremy Hawkins and Mark Pender are with me today. Jeremy covers the UK and Europe, while Mark monitors the US. This is a quiet holiday shortened week from the economic perspective, with few economic releases and no major central bank meetings on the calendar. However, enough was left behind to digest from last week's deluge of meetings to discuss. Jeremy, why don't you?
Okay, thanks, Anne. Well, in Europe, I think investors are really still trying to fathom out whether ECB interest rates can go any lower or not. As people probably saw, the euro bounced quite significantly after the central bank's last easing package announcement on, 10th of March. And since then, there appears to be something of an ongoing damage limitation exercise being undertaken by some of the council members, notably the central bank's chief economist, but perhaps more significantly, also Lautenschlager, the German executive council member, who typically is seen by most as being one of the most hawkish of the council members, and indeed almost certainly wanted not to see last week's easing package take place. So the indications are, I think, as we've discussed before, that although they won't actually admit to it themselves, the central bank really would like to see a lower euro. Amongst the other central bank meetings we've had over the course of the last week or so, no surprises out of the Bank of England, which saw another unanimous vote for no change in its policy stance, and ditto the SNB, the Swiss National Bank, also deciding to keep interest rates unchanged. Obviously, the rally in Euro-Swiss helping that central bank to keep things steady. But just as a further indication that the general pattern to interest rates across Europe at the moment remains at best flat, if not down, we saw the Norges Bank cut interest rates by 25 basis points, so their reference rate now just stands at 0.5%. And yesterday, Hungary, they became the sixth central bank to move into negative figures, with their benchmark rate now at minus 0.05%. So just to reiterate, general trend in interest rates over here remains downwards. On the numbers front, the Eurozone flash March PPIs and consumer confidence suggest really no change in underlying patterns to the Eurozone economy. In a nutshell, they suggested first quarter Eurozone growth probably about 0.3% or so on a quarter-on-quarter basis. If that proves to be the case, that suggests there's been no pickup in momentum since the third quarter and fourth quarter of last year. So just underlines the fact that the ECB still has a lot of work to do if it's going to get anywhere close to attaining its inflation targets. Elsewhere in the UK, I'm going to mention Brexit, of course, over here. And we've seen the pound wobble a little bit over the last few days. And that, again, really comes down to concerns about the possibility of the UK leaving the European Union. The latest poll from ICM, which is one of the more highly regarded pollsters over here, suggested that those wanting to stay in the European Union fell a couple of percentage points to 41%. The outcamp are up 2 percentage points at 43%. Unknowns at 16%. So however you want to look at it, it's still an extremely tight call, and that leaves sterling, of course, looking very vulnerable. I'll round off quickly. We just mentioned, since we're talking about central banks, Canada, this time from the fiscal side. The budget announced yesterday by the Liberals came out with the expected net injection of about 10 billion Canadian dollars, or half a percentage point of GDP over the coming year. So it pretty well matched market expectations, but it really also suggests then there's that much less pressure on the Bank of Canada to come out and cut interest rates again. So looks as if we're going to see rates out of the BOC probably on hold for some time. As you mentioned, for the calendar this week, it's pretty quiet over in Europe too. Of reference, so it's worth keeping an eye open for. In Germany, we'll have the GFK Consumer Sentiment Index, which has started to go the wrong way of late. And also in the UK, we'll get retail sales and the CBI Distributive Trade Survey, which will update domestic demand. And one last note, as I mentioned, we'll get the clocks in Europe going forward 1 hour on Sunday, which will mess up my hopes for a lion. And that's about it from here.
Just want to add a note about the Bank of Japan, who is experiencing the same thing with their currency as the ECB. The Bank of Japan had hoped that the yen would depreciate after they announced their negative rates. However, That didn't happen, although it went down to about $121 a dollar initially after it. It is currently trading just a shade under 113 as we speak. The fiscal year in Japan ends on March 31st, which is next week. This is a particularly critical time of the year for exporters, namely, when the weaker the yen, the better it is for their profits. Mark?
Sure. Well, last week, of course, we had the Fed. They stepped aside, and it really seemed to be becoming less of a factor here. They seemed to be not really hawkish at all. It was a very, very dovish statement. We've had some hawkish comments this week from individual FOMC members, but that it could be just in compensation for what really was a dovish meeting, pushing back their projected rate hikes, cutting them in half from 4 to 2, which really is no surprise since the market had already priced that in. Growth here in the U.S. is steady, roughly 2% trending. We have inflation. It's still under target. It may be coming up to target. It's definitely worth watching. The U.S. is still the place for where we do see non-commodity related price pressures. Wages are still soft, maybe at the 2% range. Need to get that up to 3% before the Fed really starts to feel any heat over needing to react against the risk of wage inflation. That, of course, would be by withdrawing stimulus. The data we've had this week, though light, has been telling. We had a big jump in the Richmond Fed manufacturing survey, really a historical jump for this indicator, and it's been around quite a long time. So that combined with the Empire State and the Philly Fed report of the prior week, which both showed an emerging strength after a long, long spell of weakness, does suggest that the dampening effect from the dollar, from prior strength in the dollar, may be easing. The dollar is down several percentage points this year, and that may be helping exports. And it also suggests that energy equipment, trouble in energy equipment, may be easing. Oil has been up, and maybe demands for tubes and pumps and those kinds of things may be coming back. But it's, even if the factory sector does come back, it's going to be coming back from a low base, unfortunately. And then and an offset to that is that week's housing data. We've had new home sales today, and they did come up, but the trends are still a little bit soft, and permits are still soft in data from last week. And then we had existing home sales, which unfortunately did come down. The housing sector really hasn't gotten off to a start this year at all. It will have to wait, I guess. Seasonal factors play a big part in winter housing data, adding to it to make up for the weak seasonality during the winter. But the opposite will be true during the spring when the market picks up, and that would be, I think, a more telling sign of housing. But unfortunately, the big risk that the Fed was pointing to, and is really and why I think it's becoming less of a factor in the market. It's not only the political campaign here, which is extraordinary, but it's also global risks, and those are not only weakening and slowing in China and stuff. It's also terrorism, and we had another attack in Brussels, and I think that is really another contributing reason why we shouldn't be expecting an aggressive Fed. And Jeremy, what's the latest on that?
Well, it's becoming an issue over here is obviously downplaying it far too much. But I think from financial markets' viewpoint, it is becoming of increasing concern in the sense that it seems becoming more of a, you can't say an everyday event, but it's happening far too often. And I think it has, certainly early on this morning, out of London anyway, we saw some early euro selling taking place, and that was moving into the dollar and appeared to be more than anything else, since weren't really much going on in terms of the figures, you know, to do with investor concerns about how this terrorist issue is going to be dealt with within Europe and what are the implications for European Union and everything else. And indeed, within London, some people are interpreting the latest developments in Brussels as perhaps being another reason why we might decide to pull out of the European Union once we get to the Brexit vote in June. And again, that's just helped to fuel some of the sterling selling. So it does seem this sort of political unrest is having an impact on financial markets in general. Just one quick thing, Mark, on your side of the pond, what's the sort of the early calls at the moment on first quarter US GDP?
Well, it's about low 2% right now. Consumer spending is going to be maybe an annualized 3%, which is pretty respectable. The non-residential component is less strong, but still hanging in there. However, net exports may be a problem, but hopefully that with that decline, we're going to see a trade in goods. We're going to see a trading goods data in the next week for February. Hopefully that we'll see a little bit of a pickup in exports based on the dollar, and maybe we can see a little bit of strength. Really, the economy is doing very, very well, and I really believe that if it wasn't for the global factors, the Fed in April or June rate hike, or there may have already been a rate hike. Jeremy, when we had the Paris attacks, were there any measurable change in either consumer confidence or consumer spending or any kind of variable there?
Well, there was certainly, and this goes back to what, November of last year, when we saw the attacks, as you mentioned, taking place in Paris. The first round impact was to hit pretty well the following. Obviously, it's difficult getting the data exactly right on these things, but there was a sharp decline which came through at the back end of last year in consumer spending. To a lesser extent, it filtered through in terms of the consumer confidence data. But that said, it was offset and more sharply than expected once we get into the beginning of this year. So putting a straight line through it, it appeared to be, you know, a temporary factor which was quickly reversed. That, I suppose, at the time was regarded as being a one-off. Now with Brussels and there's increasing concerns about where, you know, who's going to hit next, perhaps this one might have a bit more of a long-lasting impact.
Does the ECB refer to these issues at all?
As yet, so far, it's very much steered well clear of that. But I think if it becomes the case that political unrest in this shape or form starts to have a real underlying impact on the way the Eurozone economy is performing, then it will necessarily have to start taking it on board in terms of what it's going to do with its interest rates. Otherwise, you know, there's even less chance of it fulfilling its mandate of this, you know, meeting this near 2% inflation target. But honestly, I do wonder, just in general, people talking about, you know, downside risk to the global economy, if it's not all starting to get a little bit out of hand in the sense that the US, after all, isn't doing that badly. And although I'm hardly bullish on the Eurozone, growth in the Eurozone appears to be just moving sideways. It's not contracting. It's round about, you know, on a US basis, somewhere between 1 and 1.5% annualized on a quarterly basis. So it's not great. Same sort of things happening in the UK, and we're a little bit stronger. So I think at this stage, it's more to do with stagflation than the real risks of another recession. And the big risk around that is that if people keep talking things worse, then eventually, you know, it becomes self-fulfilling.
But there's always China. Now slowing in China is easing a little bit. Is that right?
No, it's sort of leveled out. Japan is doing much of nothing. China has had their big meeting, and there's very little, you know, they're going to try to control things. But the markets investors have either gotten used to the fluctuations over there, or the fluctuations are less. For example, yesterday, I think the Shanghai Composite was down something like 2%. Today, it was up a couple of percentage points. So, you know, the swings like that seem to become more usual. I think, guys, it's time to end the session. Thank you for your contributions.